Welcome to a special edition of the 155 Election Podcast, the Ward 8 Hamilton City Council by-election. Episode 160. Colleen Wicken, you are running for Ward 8 Councillor in the by-election. Welcome to the 155 Podcast.
Thank you, Joey, and I'm very happy to be here.
So firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my Ward 8, it's in my heart. I've lived in the ward for 40 years now and volunteered for 30 plus 11 in the counselor's office, and I have continued to help the residents that weren't being responded to in the last 7 years.
Why are you running for Ward 8 counselor, and why should we vote for you?
That's a big story. Experience number one, top of the line. I never stop doing the work that I've done for Ward 8. I live in the ward, as I said. It has been my home. I care about it with a passion. I volunteered on the Mohawk College Neighborhood Association. I created the Bonington Buchanan Mohawk Southam Neighborhood Association, and I have worked with the residents right over to Old Mohawk Road when it was one big ward until the ward boundary revision. And I have now only 18 neighborhoods where before there was 26, and there are a lot of issues within the ward that need to be dealt with that haven't been handled.
Do you live in Ward 8, yes or no?
Yes.
What are your thoughts on residency and representation?
Wow. There's still a lot of empty homes, and there's a lot of people that are... We have a lot more international students than what we had before. Before, we had a lot of problems and complaints about absentee landlords, vacant houses. We don't have so many vacant houses anymore. We still have a lot of absentee landlords, and I find it funny that people that complain and they're going to clean up all those absentee landlords, they have their signs all over those properties that are vacant. And, you know, it amazed me when I got up Monday morning and saw all those signs, and I went, wow, that tells me a story about how true they are to what they're stating on their websites.
What are two of your citywide priorities for Hamilton?
The very first thing that I want to look at in the Ward 8 budgets is where the leakage is and how to stop it, because our taxes keep going up. Our roads were supposed to be done this year, but after the former councillor left office, that program was all canceled, and our roads have not been touched in over 50 years. A lot of them, the asphalt is now gravel. That's number one. Safety is the next. I want to bring back the SEPTED program to the neighborhood so they know how to present their properties so they're safe on their properties, and how it helps prevent being burglarized, helps prevent having your car stolen. And God only knows we've had enough shootings in this city, and we don't need to defund the police. We need to increase the funding so we have more officers on the street.
What are two of your priorities for Ward 8?
So strictly for Ward 8, community involvement. Going back to the neighborhood meetings that we had prior to 2018, we did neighborhood meetings and meet and greets constantly so that we knew what was going on in the ward. And the residents, my message to the residents is you are the eyes and ears of the counselor's office. Counselor can't be everywhere, but if you need something, you need to let them know, no matter how trivial it is. I know I've had some requests about speed humps, which everybody hates. On one hand, you get a call about potholes because people are racing down the street. And in the next hand, you get somebody has to fix the potholes because you can't drive down the street at 2 miles an hour. And crossing guards. We have major arterial roadways with Garth and West Fifth and Upper James. We have schools in the heart of neighborhoods. We do need crossing guards, and we need to remind the residents, the drivers, not to pass school buses like they do on Garth. It's a constant thing.
The city of Hamilton is facing a fiscal crisis. According to the city's own financial projections, Hamilton's discretionary reserve is forecast to be down to just $1 in 2027. The city's last fiscal update was in November 2023, so none of us know the current state of city finances. In November 2026, the new council term begins. What are your thoughts on this coming fiscal cliff, and how do you plan to approach budgeting?
The budgets are a total and complete mess. We have so much, as I said before, so much leakage out of those budgets. Prime example is a road cut, as an example. they come along. There's a sewer water backup, so they have to come down and cut up the street and get into the underground. And the contractor that does that is mandated to do the cut, do the repair, top it up. But they're responsible for that cut for a designated amount of time, whether it's 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. And there's someone that's supposed to monitor that. So if they're not monitoring it, and the original cut, let's for rounded out, say, costs $1,200 to $1,500, and then it's not topped up. So at the end of their mandated guarantee, they have to call another contractor to come in. So he's going to charge them once again that another $1,200 to $1,500. That's leakage, and that's money that comes out of the tax base, and that's why our taxes keep going up and the people keep complaining. There's a lot more than just road cuts where there's leakage, duplications of things, consulting fees, top of the line there. They charge a fortune to consult. We have staff that we pay big, big bucks to. They shouldn't have to call in a consultant. They should know themselves. So there's lots of places that budget can be sliced down and put back into manageable dollars.
As Ward 8 counselor, you will have around $2 million per year in discretionary funds to allocate. How do you plan to manage these funds?
It depends on the demands at hand. I walk these streets all the time, but the repairs, one thing that I will note is that in 2018, when I left the counselor's office, we were in the middle of a big project. On that project, there was at least 25 discrepancies in the roads that were repaired. They were never corrected. I took pictures. I sent them into the sitting counselor. Nothing was ever done. So now those roads that were repaired have to be redone. Part of that would be discretionary. I believe that our city is in crisis with the unhoused, and we need to have some type of ability to help those that are not only within our ward, but across the city. And we need to have someone using portions of their discretionary fund for those reasons, because we have lots of vacant buildings where these people could be housed that are not being housed for one reason or another. And we always have to do upgrades, and generally upgrades to parks and that are, some of them are budgeted from the 5-year capital plan and some of them aren't. But what happens right now with this by-election, that budget's already been set. I can make some adjustments, like I'd like to know where that $5 million went that was going to go into the Bonington neighborhood when I'm looking at road cuts that are just disgusting and have never been repaired. First thing I'm going to do is find out where these dollars have gone that were designated. We got letters from the city saying it was going to happen, and now it's not. That's part of the discretionary funds.
You're promising to improve City Hall. I'm feeling exhausted on this topic because I heard every candidate in the 2022 change election promise they were going to make City Hall transparent. If elected, you'll have 1 year inside City Hall before the new council term begins in November 2026. How will you use the coming year to prepare an action plan on transparency?
One of the first things, Joey, is to get the people to come back to work. Too many of them are working from home. They're being paid to work from home. Are they really working? I know that when I worked in the office before, we wrote over $90,000 in tickets in just the four neighborhoods that surround Mohawk College. I'd love to know what those stats are now, because I know they're nowhere near, because I see a 2-hour parking zone where they're there for 8 to 12 hours and not a ticket is laid. Now everything seems to be enforcement by complaint, which when you're in a situation where you have all these vehicles on the street, they need to have someone in there. And you call office after office. Either the administrator isn't there, or the staff isn't there, or you get one of my favorite responses, well, I'm sorry, but that bylaw officer right now is on vacation and no one has carriage of his files. Well, why not? I mean, if a staff member goes on vacation, there should be somebody that's going to cover them off, not make you wait till that guy comes back. And in some cases, it seems like they got 6 weeks vacations because they don't get back to you. So that's one of the big things. Make the people come back to the office.
October 8th, you'll be sworn into office and take your seat in the council horseshoe. On that day, council will vote on zoning reforms, including upzoning Upper James between the Link and Rymel, and residential zoning reform to permit medium-density missing middle housing along minor and major arterial roadways. The housing crisis will be a literal day-one issue for you. How will you approach planning approvals, and how will you use zoning reform to address housing shortages?
Oh, here comes my soapbox. I've spoken with residents regarding this, and the big issue is the city says you have to notify anybody that lives within 150 meters of where this project is going to take place. That's like not even a city block. So I have always, when anything was going before planning of that nature, and even small, just a small change, we would go without limit to all the neighborhoods that surrounded it. Like the one on Upper James, it should be going to Allison, it should be going to Kennedy East and West, it should be going to Shelburne, Mewburn, Rickmans. They're all affected by that. And Rymel Road right now is just a mess in that area. They have put up more stoplights. Yes, they have. But in the winter, you can't get in and out. And unless they're going to do something with the Fortino's parking lot there for this big high-rise development, where are people going to go? You can't go out onto Upper James and make a right-hand turn unless you're at a light. And they just have not prepared for that properly. And when I look at the expansion up there, I was looking at this morning, and I'm thinking to myself, when you go along Rymel Road, well, there was never ever farmland there that was anything other than grazing property. So beyond the build that is currently there, beyond the Kennedy neighborhood and beyond the Allison neighborhood, you have a hydro corridor. That hydro corridor as well, no building on that, no camping on that, no nothing on that. And then beyond that, there needs to be, we needed a South Central Hospital on the mountain. We've needed this for years. Since they closed up Shadoke, we have nothing up there. And beyond that, there's housing, but there's also, there was in the works a plan to put in a truck route that went straight across. And I've been up there driving and I'm looking at it thinking, this looks like they're going to go ahead with this. And it would be a truck route to take those trucks off of Upper James and off of the link. Because if they were to do a capture on the link, I bet you that they would find at least 70% of those plates do not live in this city, but were responsible for the upkeep. So that vote, it is not fair to the people that live there, and they need to rethink it. And there's another one on Upper Wellington and Stone Church, same thing. And these votes that come forward, I couldn't even begin to remember when they did the one for West 5th and Stone Church, but it sat vacant for 15 years before anybody put a shovel in the ground. And it's the same thing at Upper James and Stone Church. It's still vacant. So how long is it going to take to develop? And high rise, you got to go. We can't, there's not the sprawl land. And if we don't have taxes coming into this city, we're no longer a steel city. We're a medical and education city and nobody pays taxes. And that's why our taxes are so high. And we need to do something build wise where we're going to get tax dollars from the size of the building, the footprint of the building. It goes straight up, but we're still going to get tax from it. And whatever we get tax from into the city coffers is going to hopefully lessen the cost to the homeowner.
Let's discuss development charges. Mississauga Mayor Carolyn Parrish was elected on June 10th, 2024. She formed a housing task force that first met on July 10th and issued a comprehensive report 6 months later in January 2025. The report's action plan was implemented by a unanimous vote of Mississauga City Council. It creates deep incentives for new market affordable and family housing and has time limits to ensure developers actually build. This proves municipalities can respond quickly to housing market conditions. What are your thoughts on development charges? Do you have goals for development charge reform, and how will you approach this issue if elected?
There was some rumblings of the city of Hamilton dropping development charges by a percentage. I think that's a big mistake because, you know, you cannot build infrastructure without roads, sewers, water. That's what your development charges go to. There's generally almost every neighborhood has a park. And without that kind of money coming from the developer, where does it go? Out of our pocket. So development charges need to be kept level. They need to be moved forward because too much of it is stalled. And if the city says, well, no, you can't build there, not what this design is for, then they go to the Ontario Land Tribunal. There's another few months. And a prime example of that is what's going on with Ward 2 in the Jamesville. That should have been done long ago. That's been vacant for years and years. And you've got a big shot like CN and CP that are pushing their weight around. And, you know, we need to have something that we can go up against that.
Road safety is a significant issue in Ward 8. Upper James is by far Hamilton's most dangerous road, with nearly every section significantly more dangerous than average for both motorists and pedestrians. What's your plan to address safety on Upper James? Does your plan include unpopular but necessary changes? And if so, how do you plan to implement them?
Well, we have a major highway running through the middle of the city. That's just poor planning to begin with. And as I said earlier, there was discussion in 2017, 2018 about a truck route that would take the big trucks off. And, you know, I live two blocks from there, so I know exactly what the issues are. People need to learn to cross in crosswalks, not dash out in front of vehicles and thinking they're safe. You paint lines on a road and people think they're safe in that area. But you know what? You're not, because there's always somebody who all of a sudden you step out and the driver all of a sudden sees you, goes to hit the brake, hits the gas, and the next thing you know, you're hood on it. And that's part of what happens on Upper James. The center turning lane is not properly used. It's used as a driving lane, and it's a mess for a highway. The province should be responsible for the resurfacing and paving of number 6 highway, not the city and not the people of Hamilton. They need to make absolute changes to that roadway, to the turning lanes. They need to make changes at every signal. And yes, it's going to inconvenience the general public, but what's more important, your safety or just being able to get home a second earlier if you make it home?
What's your overall plan to address road safety?
I like to say speed humps everywhere, but I know that doesn't go over very well. People need to respect, and I know that's a word that's far from vocabulary anymore. When it says 40K, do 40K. Red light cameras, street cameras, where I live, it's like a raceway, and it needs speed humps, but they put speed humps all around it. They talk about bump outs. I'm going to do a segment on bump outs later today, but in my neighborhood, there are some concrete bump outs. That's a good thing, except the people that live on those corners need to have corner clearance. And so in order for me to turn left off of West 3rd onto Monarch, I have to go into the eastbound lane, and I could be in a head-on collision because of a bush. Now they have taken to painting imaginary bump outs on the road, saying, well, this is what this is. It's a bump out, but we're painting it on the roadway just to show the turning angle of a vehicle. Well, when I go back to that concrete bump out this afternoon, it's interesting to notice the tire marks up on the bump out. So don't feel safe. And I had that discussion this morning with someone when they put the, I guess you would call them pylons, but they're collapsible pylons, when they put them on Lock Street. And it was a pedestrian crossing. And I'm thinking, you're not safe in there. Car can knock those down. A bike can knock those down. So don't, once again, common sense and respect for what's around you. And you need to look at the safety, look at the speeds. Maybe they need, in these small neighborhoods, maybe they need to drop it to 25K instead of 40, just to make people more aware.
Hamilton City Council meetings. Attendance, respect, and focus are all issues. I want to ask you about one specific issue. Councillors leaving, not attending, or not focusing attention on public delegations. What expectation will you set for yourself when it comes to listening to delegations?
Well, I certainly wouldn't get up and walk out on them. I have seen the rudeness of councillors and just getting up and walking out. You know, when they redid City Hall and then they redid the council chambers, it is my opinion that they should have put a cell phone blocker in there. Because there's nothing to me, if I'm watching a council meeting and I'm seeing a councillor that's sitting there scrolling his phone, not paying attention, just scrolling his phone or joking with the councillor next to him, it's very discerning. They each have an executive assistant. If there is an emergency, that executive assistant, all she has to do is go to the door and wave at them, and they know that she's not going to bug them, or he is not going to bug them, unless it's something important. They don't need to have their phones in there. I also got complaints about people saying, so Are they going to doze off in that chair that's so comfortable and big leather, easy chair? They need to rethink the way things are around that horseshoe. In my personal opinion, they need to block cell phones and they need to make sure that it's mandatory that you attend, not just walk out and have attendance taken, walk in and have attendance taken and then walk out on the, oh, I got to take a call. That's part of it. But they never walk out on a delegation.
What are two changes you will propose to improve city services?
Go back to work. Get back in the office. Quit using consulting firms. Do your job.
What are two changes you will propose to improve quality of life in Hamilton?
Looking at parks for people. We need to have more accessibility in the parks because we do have a lot of people that just the accessibility that we have now is just not up to par. So we need to take that into consideration. I remember when we put the first wheelchair swing in Gourley Park and how well that was accepted by the public. So that would be one thing. The walking trails, we have many, many groomed walking trails. We need to, and I know it's lovely to walk where there's bulrushes and where there's tall grass and there's little critters running everywhere, but there's also a lot of ticks, and we need to do something about the tick population because I think we're losing a lot of people. And now we have this Rocky Mountain yellow fever happening in Ontario, and we need to have some kind of control. Being a farmer's daughter, I remember many years ago, we used to have the volunteer fire department come out, and we used to do a burn of grass when it was infested with whatever. And they don't do that anymore, but that was one sure way to get rid of ticks and fleas and everything else. And we thought, we looked into that in the Sheldon neighborhood when people were complaining. I went to one house there and the whole side of the house was covered with ticks. And that's in the city, like that's just up the street. And that's scary. So those two things, making our parks more accessible and our walkways, making sure they're clean, well lit. Some of our neighborhoods, this neighborhood that we're sitting in, it's almost totally landlocked. There's only a few entrances in. So when you're in the heart of that neighborhood, there's lovely, I'm not going to say maintained, but there's lovely paved walkways from one street to another next to houses. They're about 10 feet wide. They are bushed on both sides, but a lot of them are not lit. They are used as a dumping ground for tires. They're kind of scary at night because they're not lit, but it's a quick way to get from your house over to the park or over to the church or over to the school. And they need to be lit and maintained better.
It's August 2026. I'm writing a review of the four-year council term that's just ending. What three words do you hope will describe your 10 months as a city councilor?
Wow, she did a good job. That's a difficult one, Joy, because I'm not one to blow my own horn. I know my stuff. I've got the experience. And hopefully I will do what the people are asking me to do at this point. And hopefully I will run another term. I'm 100% for term limits. But you have to do the job. You have to represent the people. You have to listen to the people. And I hope that's what they say. She did the job. She listened. And I can quote Bob Bertina on that. She did the work.
What experience has most motivated you to seek a seat on Hamilton City Council?
What's going on around me in the ward, the shooting on Upper James, the lack of police in the neighborhoods, which is something I hear all the time, the condition of the roads in the neighborhoods, the misinformation that's being put out there by, sadly, other candidates. And I just like to say this, that when you see someone with a shopping cart, and belongings in the shopping cart, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are unhoused. It means that they are a student moving from one rental property to another. So don't poo-poo them and treat them like that. I mean, I've seen it happen. This is the way students move. They don't have cars. And they pile all their stuff into a shopping cart. You see them three or four times in a day moving from one residence to another, probably because a friend of theirs lives down the street and the rent's a little cheaper and the house is clean. And that's important. And on that topic, we need to crack down on the landlords and make sure the houses are clean and safe. You can't put 12 people in a 900-foot bungalow.
Thank you. That's the end of the questions. Do you have closing remarks you wish to share?
Thank you, Joy, for the opportunity. And just, you know, I know it's a by-election. I know by-elections are, yeah, we got 26 people and that's quite a crowd. But get out there and vote. It's your right. And as Rick Mercer once said, scare the hell out of the government and get out and exercise a right that you have that people across the world do not. Thank you.